Hello and welcome to Tech Advantage, a podcast by the Luxembourg Institute of Science and Technology. This month, on the 21st of March to be precise, is the International Day of Forests. On the United Nations webpage dedicated to this day, the first couple of lines read, "When we drink a glass of water, write in a notebook, take medicine for a fever or build a house, we do not always make the connection with forests. And yet, these and many other aspects of our lives are linked to forests in some way or another. Forests are indeed intricately linked to human life. But are today's forests the same as people had known them before? How have they changed? And what impact has this change had on us and on Earth? And what is being done to protect them? Today we have with us Richard Keim, who now leads the catchment and eco-hydrology group here at LIST. We have him with us to give us some answers. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
Welcome to Tech Advantage.
Thank you. I'm excited about this.
So, forests. I have to be honest with you. I grew up in India, right? I grew up in Calcutta, to be precise. And we have forests, like real forests, but I grew up in a forest of concrete, you know, concrete jungle, literally. So I unfortunately didn't have a lot of exposure in that sense to forests. And
I think that's increasingly the experience of people globally. More and more urbanization, and people become less and less connected to the things that the ecosystems do for us.
Yeah, and that it's worse now, actually, because when I was growing up, there were at least some trees that you could see. There was this huge eucalyptus tree that was just, you know, outside our window. But now it's not even there. I don't even know what happened to it when I went back. So first of all, we'll get to that part of how forests have changed over time. But let's, like, you know, the UN webpage says that, you know, we don't even think when we are drinking a glass of water or we're, you know, I don't know, we just replaced plastic bags with paper bags in supermarkets. We don't even think that all these things are somehow related to forests. So if you could just tell us, what role do forests play in our lives?
Wow. What role don't they play in our lives? You know, there's no life on Earth without plants. And there's nothing for us to eat. There's nothing for anything. It's the plants that convert the sun's energy into things to eat for animals. So there's literally nothing that doesn't come from plants of some kind. Now, how much comes from forests is an interesting question that's a little bit hard to – maybe it's a little hard to split from agriculture. But the one thing that forests are really responsible to – or one thing that forests are really responsible for us – probably that's even more basic than drinking water is the air we breathe, isn't it? You know, the oxygen on Earth gets recycled through the plants just the same way that that the water gets moved through the forest. So it's even more basic than just the water.
I read up, thankfully, a little bit before, and I came across the term carbon sink. Why do we use this? Why a carbon sink for forests?
The carbon cycle is one of the, shall we say, newest appreciated services from ecosystems. I guess I should say, I just used a word, ecosystem service. It's a little bit old-fashioned. You know, in science, we talk about ecosystem functions, mm-hmm. how things work, ecosystem services, what they do for us. But
what is an ecosystem service?
Well, I shouldn't even say it. That's the reason I've stopped myself, because it makes it sound like the ecosystem is only useful if it does something for you. It's entertaining. It's actually a replacement for a former term that we called ecosystem values. Doesn't that sound terrible? That got that got replaced a decade or two ago, and now I think it's something like what nature provides for people or what nature contributes to people. You know, we're really trying to understand what the right word is for this. But there are certain things that we get from forests and, well, other ecosystems too. And it's really important to recognize them for their direct effects on our lives. And people that worked really hard to try to quantify what those are and help us to recognize those. Because often what happens is the way that we manage the world, we take those things for granted and we don't assign them any value either. Maybe emotional or moral value, but economic value can be hard to
measure.
That's right. Hard to measure and hard to assign. Often it just gets left out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have one of the most recent ecosystem services, the term I still prefer, that people are extremely interested in learning more about because we can affect it, is its role in the carbon cycle on Earth. The carbon cycle on Earth was mainly an arcane topic for people like me who are interested in the basic functions of ecosystems until just a few decades ago, when we started to realize that when there's carbon dioxide in the air, we've known this for a long time, of course, but carbon dioxide in the air changes the heat balance of the Earth. And when that happens, when we increase the carbon dioxide in the air, as we have been throughout the Industrial Revolution, before the Industrial Revolution, but increasingly during the Industrial Revolution. Putting carbon dioxide into the air, of course, warms the Earth, and I think most people are familiar with this concept. But when you think about where was it before, well, the answer was it was in forests, and it was, well, underground, but
it was not emitted so highly by humans like it is now, right?
Right. Right. And even those underground stores come from forests. Not entirely. Many of them are from wetlands. But yes, those underground stores, actually, I guess most of them are from wetlands. But they forested wetlands in many cases. Yeah, right. So the Industrial Revolution that put the carbon into the atmosphere. So now we're trying to find ways to get that carbon back out of the atmosphere. You know, reducing emissions is one thing, but getting that atmospheric carbon back where it will no longer absorb the energy and reheat the Earth, doing that is an important goal of forest management that almost didn't exist.
We
can do that. We can plant trees.
Ah, okay. Yes,
that's right.
Course.
We can.
Silly question. Yes, well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, planting trees, converting unforested, hopefully formerly forested areas, converting them to forest, absolutely increases the amount of carbon that's stored on the Earth. Now, it's nowhere near enough to offset the emissions that we're currently responsible for, let alone all the emissions that have occurred in centuries past, But it is one of the quickest, most reliable, and cheapest ways to get the carbon out of the atmosphere, get the CO2 out of the atmosphere. And it often does so, gives us opportunities to increase other ecosystem functions. We plant forests, we create wildlife habitat, we change the water cycle.
What is the water cycle?
Well, of course, water's the other thing without which there can't be any life on Earth. Yeah, and the plants on the Earth are there to fill what we call an ecological niche. They are there to take advantage of the opportunity. The sunlight and the water are the opportunity, and the plants are exploiting that. And when plants grow and use water, they cycle it through themselves, and they change the hydrologic function. So although it's difficult to measure, mm-hmm. globally, the amount of water that passes through forests on the way to the atmosphere, so as the trees use the water, that number might be something like 30%, or maybe, I don't know, given the uncertainties, we'll say roughly half of water that returns to the atmosphere from land does so through forests.
Right.
Rather than just directly evaporating from lakes and things like that. Yeah, so plants use water. And how much they use and how fast they use it determines how much humidity there is and things like that. Very important. And when we change the forests and change humidity, crazy things can happen. They're experiencing currently, for example, right now in Brazil in recent years, it seems that deforestation in the Amazon basin has actually reduced the water use by the plants or transpiration, and then the subsequent formation into rain clouds downwind, creating, it does seem like the deforestation is becoming linked to droughts experienced by some cities in Brazil. Pretty important problem coming home to roost. So these sorts of cycles, those sorts of cycles are also evident in things like irrigated agriculture. You know, if we irrigate, plants use a bunch of water, downwind of that, there's more rain. It's not that crazy to think about when someone says it, but you might not realize.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about that.
I was reading an article, and it said that what we are seeing now is that once, you know, before apparently when there were wildfires in California, people would see, you know, because the wildfire would damage a certain number of trees. But after those wildfires, the trees would regrow. And apparently now, once a wildfire is over, an event of wildfire is over, there's no more regrowth. That's what is happening also in the Amazon basin, and there's no regrowth after deforestation, and like you were saying. So we are coming to the next part of our conversation about how forests are changing and have changed over the years, and how has that impacted our climate and vice versa. How has climate change basically impacted also forests?
Well, after deforestation in the Amazon or a wildfire in California, forests will come back. But what kind of forest? What will it be like? Will it be like the one that was there before?
Mm-hmm.
Will it have all the same functions and provide the same things that we expect from it? And the answer in some of those cases is probably no, especially when we've had climate change that's maybe shifted the conditions away from what that forest was formed under. So in a place like California, where California's climate is so crazy, yeah, they have, you know, they really go through wide swings of, you know, long-term changes in precipitation. And so, you know,
and also extreme heat, right?
And extreme heat, yes, exactly. And so when, you know, when we see those fires, and there have been big heat waves, but also just recently in California, there was a huge water year. And one of the underappreciated risks probably in California is that of a huge flood. So California, that conversation, that's a long conversation, an interesting one that I mostly don't know that much about. But what's interesting about the forests in California is that they seem right now to be probably not adapted to a drier, warmer climate that we expect. For example, we know that as climate warms, the amount of snow that accumulates will be less, because the snow levels will be higher. It'll just be warmer, so it'll be rain instead of snow. And winter rains that end up in the rivers and go to the sea are a lot different than winter snows that stay and melt slowly through the spring and into the summer. It's a lot different for soil moisture and tree growth and not to mention the aquatic ecosystems too. But forests that let's say were established and grew in a cooler, wetter environment that are now in a warmer and drier one, well, yeah, what's going to happen? We're not totally sure. We have some ideas that maybe the forests that exist today won't come back like they are.
What do you mean when you say that they won't come back like they are? They won't be the same trees?
Won't be the same species?
Same species,
won't be the same density?
Right.
The soils may not recover for a long time after a fire?
Yeah,
things
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
So this is why we, what can we do about that? Because, you know, we sure like these ecosystem services. And even if they're not economic, we maybe feel a little bit guilty about this sort of result. And so it's very important that forest management is part of the equation for all of this, just like it is for any ecosystem. You know, we have the opportunity to change some of these things. The difficulty comes because the systems are very complicated. So it's not always as obvious as plant more trees, fix the climate. You know, yeah. That is not true. We can't just plant trees and fix the climate. That just won't happen. It can only be yeah, that's right. And let's make a healthier forest. Well, that sounds great, but what does healthier mean?
Yeah.
Especially when the climate's different, it's not easy to manage all of those functions. One thing that I should say I wanted to say today is that these ecosystem functions are really what we manage. And what do I mean by that? I mean things like, where do the tree seeds come from? Do they come from trees that are there, or do we put trees there ourselves? Where does the food for the animals that live there come from? Do we plant it? Do we let it grow naturally? What do we do when there's a fire, or there's pests, or there's a windstorm that blows over a bunch of trees? Do we let it sit and recover as it does on its own? Do we remove dead things and put new ones? These choices are, on the face of them, often they're clear. Oh, the trees all blew down on the side of the mountain. We want to restore the ecosystem. Let's plant trees. But forests are not museums of trees.
Yeah.
They're places where things grow and die, and both of those things are necessary for a fully functioning ecosystem. So just because there are dead trees doesn't mean it's not a healthy ecosystem. And when you think about it over a long term, right, you have to think that the trees have to be established, and they grow and they die and they succeed each other. That when they die, they become food for things.
Yeah.
Right. They produce food when they're fruit, and so on. So trying to understand the whole forest ecosystem from that long term and broad scale view, really challenging. There are so many details involved. And
what have we done to them? I'm just, you know.
What have I done?
No, what have we done? To, you know, as no.
I really thought you said that.
No, sorry, no. I was just no. As you were talking, I was imagining and visualizing, you know, the beautiful forests, and I was just thinking, what have we, as the, you know, human beings, we have done to them over the years, and how have we? I mean. How did we come here? I mean, to this point where we have to think that, you know, that it won't be the same again.
It won't be the same again, but it never is the same again, is it? So it went from being something that controlled us to something that's coming under our control, which is a little bit scary, isn't it? We're coming to the place where our effects on the planet are so pervasive. You know, we cut things down, we grow them. I mean, just from a forest perspective.
Yeah.
We neglect them, we tend them, we modify them, we subject them to air pollution,
we're cutting them down. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, sorry to interrupt.
No, because I'm off on a tangent.
No. I just had this, because, you know, with the Ukraine war and everything going on and the energy prices soaring and... Do you think now we are cutting more trees because we need wood to heat our homes and stuff like that, or it's just a myth that's going on?
When we lose energy sources, we find ourselves looking for replacements.
Yeah.
And wood has been discussed as, you know, that's part of the picture. Not maybe what you're thinking about, people putting, you know, logs in the fireplace.
Yeah.
But industrial power generation from wood pellets, which is that's an important industry. I don't think we fully understand that industry in terms of its effect on ecosystems and really on the carbon cycle. In theory, it can be carbon neutral to burn wood pellets because we can regrow the trees. And so we're just cycling the carbon from the atmosphere back to the trees and back to the atmosphere. But there are other considerations, such as, well, we have to put these pellets on big ocean-going ships and burn oil to move them from the place where the pellets are grown to the places where they're burned.
And just, you know, you're talking about the deforestation, the effect of deforestation in the Amazon basin. So is there a way, I mean, I'm asking out of naive curiosity, basically, is there a way that we can cut down on deforestation or just, you know, our dependency on wood? I mean, I don't know, we are, I don't know why I'm thinking of that, but, you know, vegans, you know, or vegetarians, they're going for all these synthetic or, I don't know, natural, replacements of meat.
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Yeah. Our, you know, deforestation in the Amazon is not driven by dependence on wood. It's driven by dependence on agriculture. It's converting to agriculture and other land uses. That's not a wood production problem. The dependence on wood we satisfy through mainly not those kind of extractive old forest conversions. So there's still some of that that happens for wood. But most of the wood gets produced in more like industrial forests like they're in Scandinavia, they're in continental Europe. The U.S. has a lot. That's a very important natural resource for the U.S., for example. So the industrial forestry is mostly how we satisfy our need for wood. And those other issues that you mentioned about the food supply and so on, yes, those are all intertwined with the question about forest management. How do we do that? Well, that's not something that I'm expert in and all, but yeah, I agree. It's a very important problem. Where do we get our food? You know, there is something, an interesting aspect of that I don't hear people talk about, I don't think enough. And that is that, you know, conversion to industrial agricultural, industrial forestry, those things sound pretty depressing, don't they? They do to me. I don't want the forest to be a factory. So, you know, we look for ways to be less intrusive or less disturbing when we extract our natural resources. But what happens and what can happen is that means to get the same amount of wood, we need a bigger area. And the same thing's true for agriculture, right? So if we don't use industrial agriculture, if we don't use fertilizer and pesticides, then we need more farmland because the yields are less. So these are all intertwined problems where, you know, more technological advancements in agriculture could lead to and should lead to better outcomes for forest conservation because there's less pressure on the land base in general. So there's no way to consider the food system separate from the wood system and the air system and the climate system. And those things are all intertwined in ways that challenge us all.
Right. Okay. We are digressing, but it's a good thing, you know. We get to know about a lot of different things. Coming to the conservation part, because you wanted to talk about what is being done to protect the forests and especially in terms of research, in terms of policies, in terms of laws or bills, and what is being done?
Well, you used a word that hits me in the ears, and I'm never sure what to do with it. You used the word protect.
Mm-hmm. That's not the right word.
Well, a lot of people use it, and of course, what am I going to say? It's the wrong word. You know, it's the word you wanted to use. It's your word. It's fine. But I always wonder what it means.
Mm-hmm. It's patronizing, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. It makes it sound like there's something that's in a state that needs, you know, there needs to be a control against damage.
Uh-huh.
And certainly, we're capable of damaging forests and natural resources generally.
We have damaged, haven't we?
Of course. Of course.
Yes. Yeah.
We do it every day.
Mm.
But you have to, I think it's important to think about these damages as also part of the way the ecosystems function, right? So if I go and cut down a tree, am I damaging the forest? I don't know.
No?
I don't know. Am I damaging the corn crop when I harvest it?
Mm.
I guess so. Yeah, so, you know, in a way, to think about forests as in that way, which is, you know, this sort of agricultural model of forests is I might be a little old-fashioned in saying it that way, but there, you know, for example, in the U.S., the U.S. Forest Service is in the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and that's, you know, the reason is that, you know, we farm wood. So, okay, so some forests, I would say, or some ecosystems need protection from, let's call it disturbance from people. And, you know, there are places that where human interference is almost always problematic. But then there are other places where human interference is, well, water under the bridge. It's already happened, right? Yeah. We've sort of taken responsibility for these resources. And so now we're, that's great. You know, you converted this forest in, from a native ecosystem into one that's, you know, sort of like a factory. That it's now your responsibility, right? So, so when you say protect, I think it, it reflects, I'm putting this on you, and you can push back on me if you want to, because I'm not being fair by telling you what you think. But I think many people think about forests as the former kind of ecosystem that's, you know, kind of natural and where human interference is a problem. When in fact, I would say that the majority of forests that people interact with routinely are in the second category. They're already
being damaged.
Yeah, they've already been converted. Yeah. Now, the reason I say this is not because I we shouldn't protect them, because obviously there are things there that we would like to maintain. But we also have to realize that where they're growing, they're not necessarily in a natural state. Right? Those soils have been modified. We continue to affect them through, well, like air pollution and other things, right? Climate change. And so it's up to us to figure out how they work. Figure out what we need from them. Figure out things that we don't know that we need from them yet. That's the big challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a very famous American philosopher of natural resources named Aldo Leopold. One of my favorite quotes from him is, "The first rule of intelligent tinkering is to keep all the parts." And this is the part that... when we think about how do we manage ecosystems, you know, if we manage them for wood or we manage them for beauty or we manage them for wildlife or we manage them for carbon, all of these things come at a cost for those other things and for things we didn't know we needed.
Yeah.
30 years ago, you wouldn't, well, maybe 30, 50 years ago, no one would have ever managed forests for carbon. But today, that's an increasingly important use that huge areas of forest are being dedicated to, just as an example.
Coming back to the research thing, what is being done in terms of research?
You know, LIST is part of, you know, Luxembourg's grappling with how do we deal with our natural resources? What do we do? Especially it's, I would say, most dedicated to intelligent tinkering and keeping all the parts that we have, because that's the kind of forest that we have in Luxembourg. So within my group, our group is the Catchment and Ecohydrology Group, and we're here talking about forests today, but actually it's what only half of the name. Catchment refers to watersheds. This catchments are areas of land that funnel water into a stream. And the reason that in the LIST group is named Catchment and Ecohydrology is that that eco part is so important about how that water gets to the stream and what that water is like, and then what the water is like in the stream and how in-stream ecosystems function and things like that. So that's what LIST is working on in our group. We are really focused on understanding how forests interact to give us the water quality, to give us the water yield that we rely on. Luxembourg gets its water. Do you know where the water you drink, do you know where it comes from? I'm not going to make you answer that. That's not fair.
You can see my eyes.
Yeah, most people roll their eyes around. They look up in the corner. You might have some idea, But you might not.
I do have some idea, but I...
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know
okay,
either.
Let's say that. Let's say it comes from the purification center.
Aha. Ah, there you go. It comes from the... Of course, the water comes from the water factory. That's right. Just like houses come from the cement plant and the sawmill. Oh, well, no.
Oh, my sounds okay.
Well, yeah. Well, we get water from a lot of different places. But the dominant sources for water in Luxembourg are groundwater and surface water. We have reservoirs that provide drinking water. But groundwater is also very important. So, you know, a minute ago I just described how forests affect surface water. But if there's no forests... the groundwater that recharges the aquifers that we use to supply water is also affected. It affects the amount of water that is there. It affects the chemistry, the quality of it. It affects the time at which that water is available for us to use and all of those things. So those are the things that we're working on at LIST in our group.
You know, last time we spoke with each other and you really wanted to talk about the difference between how the Americans and how the Europeans, I mean, how they perceive forests or forest management. And, you know, I got a glimpse of that when you spoke about Luxembourg forests and American forests. And that's a very interesting point of view.
I can't believe I said that to you, that I wanted to talk about that, because I am really not expert in this. However, I'm going to do it anyway.
Lovely. Let's go for it.
One of the things that's interesting about I think it has to do with the histories of different places and your connection to different resources. How do we think about them? And one of the things that's so much different about, oh, this is the great joke, the difference between Americans and Europeans.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I hope it's not going to be censored.
Oh, don't worry. Europeans think that 100 miles is a long distance and that 100 years is a short amount of time. Americans are exactly the opposite, right? Americans think that 100 years is a long time and 100 miles is a short distance. So in the U.S., we have such a shorter history that we can know what the forests were like when they were not affected by industrial activity and dense populations. And we can see what the ecosystem functions were before they were heavily modified. In Europe, though, the not so much industrial but agricultural conversions are so pervasive and wood use for such a long time that I think a lot of this sense of what the forest was originally, it's just not part of the equation, right? We just don't think about it that way. In the U.S., we think about, oh, restoring the forest to what it should be. But in Europe, I think that this question almost doesn't make any sense. No one knows what the forest looked like in 200 B.C. We know what species were there mostly. We know what animals were around. But there are a lot of unanswered questions, and I don't think it's as relevant as it would be in a landscape like the U.S. that's less populated and so on. So to me, I always find myself asking those very American questions of the European forests, and at first I was frustrated that no one could answer them until I realized they weren't the right questions.
What were the questions?
The questions were, what was this? What could we restore this to? What have we done to this that needs fixing? But the real question isn't that. The real question is, what does it need to be? Where can we go from here? And what's the right thing given what we know?
How can we tinker the thing that is already there?
That's right. We really have no other choice.
In Europe?
In Europe and well...
In Asia.
Globally.
Yeah, Asia.
That's right.
Yeah, of course.
In Southeast Asia, you know, even the last primary forests are sad to say, but they're going to become a thing of nature preserves that are defined by boundaries on maps. They're not going to be the default that cover everything and where people occupy the edge of them, right? So yeah, I don't think there's any way around that globally. And ecosystem management is a different kind of management from agriculture. It's a different kind of management than things we do in our urban lives. Mm. Because we're managing for things that we know we don't know. I really like that. We know we don't understand all how the soil functions. We know we don't understand how everything about how plants interact with the atmosphere and with the soil and the water. And we can try to act given our best information. But when we make mistakes, there may be longer-term consequences. If you build a house and it falls down, that's bad. But it's a bit more reversible, right? If you build a house and it doesn't work. Or if you plant crops and they don't grow, it's a local disaster, but okay, we can start over next year with the same place. Let's try a different crop. Let's whatever. But in a forest, well, let's try managing it this way. Oh, oops. Okay. Well, we can't really go back now, can we? Now we just have a new thing and we have to try to move it a way that we think it should go. That's a big challenge. It takes a lot of science.
Good thing you mentioned science. Let's end our conversation on a high note. Let's do that. Do you have anything else to add in terms of what science is doing to, I won't use the word protect again,
This is a difficult word. This word is, in fact, that's the goal, isn't it? That's the hard part. Are we improving? Are we conserving? What are we doing?
To conserve.
That's the big challenge.
To conserve, to
improve. How about improve ecosystem services? Because that's kind of what we're thinking. Sure. Yeah. What are we doing?
Mm. What is science doing?
What is science doing? Fortunately, a lot. Fortunately, a lot. We have people working at every level. We have people working on basic processes that I mentioned a minute ago. Things like where do plants get their water? Where do trees get their water? Doesn't that sound simple?
Yeah.
That's one thing that has been a recent contribution from LIST and from the Catchment Ecohydrology Group is learning a lot more about how plants get their water. Hmm. Where exactly do they get them? We don't get to see root systems and down into the earth. And so when there's a drought, where does the water come from to support those trees? Do they just die? Well, no, they mostly don't. Right? They mostly make it through the droughts. So where does the water come from? Does it come from deeper? How much deeper? What kind of water is that? What kind of costs are there for the plant? So working on things like that and helping to design, helping to furnish the knowledge that we need to manage forests into the next century, probably with a changed climate that includes different kinds of weather, different kinds of disturbances and different challenges than in the past. That's the role of science, and one that where I think LIST is really poised to make and is making big contributions.
And is science all over, not just in Luxembourg, is science getting the help or the support it needs from governments to manage forests?
Who are you asking? Are you asking scientists if there's enough funding? Everyone knows the answer to that. One of the reasons I'm here at LIST is because of the commitment that's here to support that kind of science. That's right. Always there can be more. But of course, we have to compete with all the other things that the world needs. So I understand that we can never have enough, but it is definitely the role that forests play in our lives. I think people are becoming more and more aware. I really do. I really think that people are learning to value the things, or learning to place value.
I do think they are.
I thought we were going to end on an up note.
Oh, yes. Sorry, brother.
I do think people are learning to value, but they're learning to value it in different ways. You know, in the past, I think people would have, if you were in more contact, I think you would have valued it in a more personal way. But I think people are learning to, with our analytical brains, value these things now. because we're learning more about exactly how to describe them in analytical ways. This is the carbon budget, what it does to the climate, and so on. This is the food system, and here's how much food we can produce. This is the wood system and how these things are in competition or that they can be in collaboration. And understanding those things in more detail allows us to care about it in ways that we couldn't before.
Well, Richard, thank you so much. There's a saying back home in India that says that we tend to value things more when they're not there, you know. So I really hope that that doesn't happen to forests, that we do learn, like you were saying, to value them, to value the trees, to value the ecosystem services, like you said, and try to improve them. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.